Good evening. I'm Jessica Markey, welcoming you to tonight's live event with Senator Costa. I'd like to thank everyone for taking time this evening to join us. Tonight, Senate Minority Leader Jay Costa of the 43rd District will take your call as he discusses the budget address made by Governor Josh Shapiro earlier today. Senator Costa will also be taking questions on this topic during the discussion. As a reminder, if you have a question and would like to join the conversation, please press star 3 on your keypad to participate. Again, press star 3 to add a comment or question to tonight's discussion. Without any further delay, let me welcome State Senator Jay Costa.
Well, thank you very much, Jessica, and good evening, everyone. It's truly an honor to have the opportunity to do another segment of our telephone town hall, this time, this evening, where we talk about the budget proposal offered today by Governor Josh Shapiro, Governor Shapiro's first budget address. I'm happy to report, I believe, that there are a number of items that a lot of folks, particularly in the 43rd District, will be happy about in terms of investments that are going to be made over the course of not only this upcoming year, but the years coming forward. This is a great opportunity for us to have this dialogue and this conversation. What I thought we'd do is I'd provide a brief outline of some of the things that the governor talked about in categories, maybe five categories or so, explain a few things within each of those categories, and then I really want to move into a discussion with the listeners, hearing the questions that you may have, and I'll be able to further elaborate either on areas that I spoke about or also areas that I didn't cover that you would like us to talk about. Again, I would remind everybody, if you want to be able to participate in the discussion, that you need to hit star 3 on your phone in order to be part of our conversation in terms of asking a question. So as mentioned earlier, the governor gave his budget proposal earlier today, which is the first step in the budget process here in Harrisburg. Over the course of the next several months, we will have budget hearings or appropriation hearings and to discuss each of the line items that the governor proposes to be funded. And each agency that he suggested an appropriation for, they will need to come in and speak with both members of the Senate Appropriations and the House Appropriations Committee to explain why and justify their request. And that process, as I mentioned, will begin in about a week or so, and these hearings will take place here in Harrisburg. After that process, that's when we will get into budget negotiations, usually in the month of May and early June, culminating in a budget agreement that typically is done by June 30th. As you may know, in years past, it's been later than that, but for the most part, the last several years, it's been okay in that space. Let me just walk through just some of the financial situation here in Pennsylvania. We started this fiscal year with a budget surplus or a beginning balance of $5.5 billion, and since that time, this amount will continue to grow. On the revenue side, the projected revenue that we set out back in June 30th of last year, we are exceeding that amount by some $600 million. So Pennsylvania is somewhat flush with resources right now. We also have in excess of $5 billion in our rainy day fund. All told together by June 30th, we expect to have about $13 billion available at our disposal. While it sounds like a tremendous amount of money, we recognize that we have to be thoughtful in terms of how we budget, and particularly as we budget going forward in the out years. As we look in the out years, we know that we will likely be able to tap into that $7 billion reserve pot that I mentioned to allow us to be able to meet our needs going forward. Governor's proposal was about a $44.4 billion state revenue proposal. When you couple that with the federal dollars that make their way through Pennsylvania, from the federal government through Pennsylvania through our appropriation process, it probably comes closer to about $90-some billion that our budget will ultimately talk about. Some of the areas that the governor spoke about and that are important to our caucus and important to me as well, I'll just rattle off to some very quickly. Certainly a conversation in the space of funding our schools and education and what's taking place in that space and some of the policy ideas are along those lines. Public safety is something that we believe is something very important. The governor talked a good bit about that and investments we want to make there as well. The economic prosperity space, the governor's made significant recommendations about workforce, how we address the critical shortage of workforces, particularly as we have as it relates, for example, to our nurses and our police officers and our teachers. Also, investments in our environment, ensure that we are making certain we're taking steps to protect our environment by going forward. Along those lines in transportation as well, the governor's taken a major step to ensure that we do two things, that we have resources available to fund, to draw down infrastructure dollars from the federal government, but also putting more reliance upon those roads and bridges in Pennsylvania. Finally, in the area with our seniors and our disabled community, Governor Shapiro has recommended that we do a significant increase in the property tax and rent rebate that so many senior Pennsylvanians avail themselves to, increasing the amount there, as well as filling, I believe, 700 additional beds with respect to or be able to put folks in the mix receiving services through the disability programs in Pennsylvania. That's a quick summary of those five areas. I'd just like to go back. In the education space, the governor is proposing approximately $560-some million increase in K-12 funding for all of our school districts across Pennsylvania. That's a significant increase over what we've done in years past. However, last year we completed a $1.2 billion investment in education in K-12 and $1.5 in total. But this proposal begins as a down payment on a recent Commonwealth Court decision which ruled that our education funding system in Pennsylvania was unconstitutional. And as that case makes its way through the court system, Governor Shapiro thought it would be best that we start with a beginning step to build upon as we go forward and maybe build upon even through this budget process to provide $567 million in that space. But in addition to that, he's recommending that we have a $100 million increase in special education funding for our school districts and also adding $30 million to our what's called our pre-K counts program, not only to grow some slots in that pre-K programming, but also to ensure that the services that are provided by these agencies that provide the pre-K services, the providers, that they have sufficient resources to be able to pay folks to be able to fill those spots in terms of the jobs that are necessary. What we're finding is that while we have sufficient number of slots, we don't have a sufficient number of folks to work in that space, largely due to the lack of resources that the providers have to pay folks. So that's a step to be able to address both, not only staffing needs, but also slots as well. In addition to that, we are looking to address the issue of the teacher shortage I mentioned briefly. The governor is proposing a $2,500 tax credit for those individuals beginning January 1 of 23 who get certified or come to Pennsylvania and are certified, for example, as a teacher. They will receive a $2,500 tax credit on their tax bill if they do that for 3 years. That issue is also, and that tax credit is also extended to teachers, in addition to teachers, to police officers, as well as folks who work in the healthcare profession, certified, for example, nurses, nurse practitioners, registered nurses, and the like. They all will be able to avail themselves to that tax credit going forward. So we're excited about what's taking place in the education space. In addition to that, there's a lot of resources making their way, or continued resources making their way into our schools with respect to our school safety programs. Again, we will be offering about $100 million in the school safety program. That primarily those dollars have been used for being able to have students access what I'll call healthcare professionals in the schools. In addition to that, this year again, last year we did $100 million from ARP money into what I'll call mental health programs in the schools and mental health counselors and the like. We are going to do that again this year with another $100 million, this time coming out of the general fund, which will be a recurring amount of money going forward. So it's an additional $100 million in school mental health programming. So we're excited about all the things that are in that space as we go forward. In public safety, the governor's proposed a significant number of changes in that space as well, certainly starting with the idea that he is going to create 4 state police cadet classes across the Commonwealth. There's a greater reliance upon our state police to patrol and serve as the police officers in so many communities in Pennsylvania. There is a shortage along those lines, and public safety is a priority for the governor and for us as well. To that end, he's going to add 4 cadet classes, which would be almost 400 students or cadets coming through the process to be able to work in that space. In order to help address the public safety funding for them, the governor is doing something which has been an issue for a number of years, and that is beginning to wean Pennsylvania off of what you refer to as the motor license fund or the gas tax. Right now, $500 million of the gas tax is used to help pay for the state police and the general fund. There's a transfer. So that $500 million, which was originally intended to be used for roads and bridges, will now be, we'll be weaning ourselves off of that. For this year, the first $100 million will come out of that fund to be able to create a sustainable pot of money to be able to pay the state police in a dedicated way as well. In addition to that, I mentioned that there's police officer $2,500 incentive as well as significant dollars that have been put into place to allow for equipment and the like for our police officers across the Commonwealth and parole officers. Those are just a couple of things in that space. Economic prosperity, the governor certainly starts with the notion that it's critically important for us to increase the minimum wage to $15. Folks know that we're the only state around this little northeast part of the country that has not raised our minimum wage in a number of years. And I believe it's been 14 years now since we had a last increase at $7.25. Simply not acceptable. We're working to do things along those lines. In addition to that, Governor's recommending that we put significant resources into job training programs and apprenticeship-type programs to provide folks the opportunity to understand what careers may be available to them and to take steps along those lines. In addition to that, in the economic space, he's creating a $20 million fund for historically disadvantaged business assistance, which he will be able to help those small businesses in our community that have certainly traditionally been denied opportunities for capital, the opportunity to be able to apply to these funds to be able to help them. As it relates to his Pennsylvania First program, $13 million increase in appropriations that will be used for what's called the money to help develop and target programs to accommodate major needs that these businesses are dealing with. So that's a major increase along those lines as well. In addition, there's other resources along those lines and the community economic development line item that I think will be very helpful managing what needs to be done there. There's dollars for municipal assistance programs, there's strategic management planning. The Pennsylvania Office of Transformation and Opportunity is a new initiative that the governor has initiated that's designed to help work ensure that people are having access to those programs. There's also going to be a new look at in terms of how companies are addressing the workforce. We've heard a lot about some things that the workforce have been, many folks have not been properly paid in the workforce. The governor's creating a new position that's going to allow for investigators to be able to review it to ensure that folks are complying with state law with respect to how they are paying employees in Pennsylvania. Our seniors, we're working closely with our seniors. One of the biggest programs that assists our seniors in Pennsylvania is referred to as the Property Tax and Rent Rebate Program. The governor is recommending significant increases, not only in the maximum amount, increasing the maximum amount from $650 a year to $1,000, and more importantly, as it relates to the income limits, raising the income limits from $35,000 to $45,000, not only for homeowners, but for renters as well. Significant increase for renters, both in the amount as well as the income limits. That's going to be an important program, knowing firsthand how many seniors come to our office and seek help in terms of applying for the property tax and rent rebate. And there are a number of things in the Department of Human Services that I mentioned. The money for the mental health programming that's important there as well. We're going to continue to talk about that. To me, that is really a critical space right now that we need to talk about, we need to be in to ensure that that takes place. And then finally, in our environmental community, taking steps to maintain the REGI conversation, which is Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative that has Pennsylvania as part of a consortium of states that provide for a emissions impact fee for those entities that want to provide, you know, put emissions into the air. We require them to pay an impact fee, which is done through an auction around the country, and the resources from that will be turned around and invested back into types of what I'll call clean technologies that would benefit not only the community and the environment, but also benefit the opportunity for green workers as well. So I really ran through a very quick summary of those different areas. As I mentioned to you earlier, I'm more interested in hearing some of your questions about what I spoke about and some of the other things that are going on in your community. I would just remind folks that if you want to ask a question, that you hit *3 on your phone if you want to participate. So, Jessica, I rambled on, and now if you want to maybe bring some of the questions up, we can get started.
Yeah, of course. We could start with Robert from the South Side. Robert,
right.
You're live with Senator Acosta.
Yes, Liz.
Robert.
I just was wanting to know about investment that you maybe would invest into the autism radar. Because I think we're waiting over 8 years now for this waiver.
So we're getting through some of the waivers from the federal government now that the emergency pandemic has seemed to settle down and the emergency declaration will be going away. I do believe that there will be continued resources in the autism space along those lines, particularly as it relates to placing individuals with disabilities into various programs. So the governor's made a commitment to work in that space, to grow the number of folks available for those services, and I think that's a very positive step.
Great. Next, we have Ophelia from the Hill District. Ophelia, you're live.
Hello.
Hi, good evening.
Oh, how you doing? Okay, now, I really appreciate this call. It really gives an understanding of what will be going on, and I just praise the Lord for our new governor that will be coming in. And I have two questions. Actually, the first one would be, okay, now, the SNAP program, with people that are on SNAP, if they start making $15 an hour, would they still qualify for SNAP? And then the second question would be, I remember Governor Wolf wanted to give us a stimulus check, but it was turned down. So is that back on the table? Will we be able to get a stimulus check? Because I believe we are in a recession with gas $5 and milk $5 and eggs $5. You know, we still need help.
So it's a great question, particularly on the SNAP. Let me first address the proposal that Governor Wolf proposed last year, $2,000 per household if you made $81,000 or less. That proposal is over. We're not going to be doing that. Our Republican colleagues in the Senate and the House rejected that last year, and now we then use those resources in other ways, primarily in education. So that bucket of money is no longer available. With regard to the SNAP benefits, as you know, that's a federal program that's driven through the states. During the pandemic, there was an increase in the amount that folks received. That ended, I believe, on February 1st. And now as we go forward, individuals who have been receiving it and other folks who are qualified will no longer be eligible. Governor Shapiro recognizes that. We recognize that. And we're putting together a pot of money in the governor's proposal to be able to replace a significant amount of the SNAP benefit amount that folks are losing. So we'll continue to receive the federal share, but we're also going to supplement that with a Pennsylvania share to those funds to be able to have that conversation. So we think that's important as well, particularly as it relates to our seniors. But the SNAP program is an important program and one that we're very pleased about to be able to make the additional supplemental payment. Thank you for that question. Next.
Next we have Veronica from Wilkinsburg. Veronica, you're live.
Hi, Veronica. We're not hearing from her.
Veronica, are you there?
How about we come back to Veronica?
Okay. So next we have Jean from Forest Hills. Jean, you're live.
Hello.
Hi, Jean. Good evening.
Hi. Well, first of all, I just want to say I was so impressed with the governor's day. And the one thing I wondered was, maybe I missed a part of it, but was there anything about gun safety in his speech? And everything else, and I was very pleased with all the points he brought up. But with all the gun, especially with the, shootings in Wilkinsburg and all over Turtle Creek and everywhere, was there anything in the appropriations for, trying to bring safety?
So there was nothing that the governor's address that would, as related to legislation, that would remove guns from the streets. Nothing like the emergency risk protection order, a ban on assault weapons, lost and stolen guns. None of those measures were part of that conversation. However, the governor was very clear, again, in adding resources to programs like Violence Intervention and Prevention Program, which we started last year. He proposed $105 million for that program, as well as other resources they're going to put into programs to make sure that we have, for example, the nonprofit security grant program that I started last 4 years ago with Representative Frankel. but there are significant resources in that space. Many of those dollars will make their way through what's called the Pennsylvania Commission on Crime and Delinquency, but those are some of the dollars that we are putting in to be able to help cover some of these initiatives. So that's one of the ways in which we're going to combat it. But it also, there's other programming we're doing, investments with respect to our school districts to make sure that we're doing things there as well to help mitigate against some of the things that are going on in our communities along those lines. Great question. Thank you.
Great. And next we have Nancy from Edgewood. Nancy, you're live with the Senator.
Hi, Senator. I ran into you at Giant Eagle a month ago, so I'm bugging you again.
That's all right.
I'm wondering if you've been able to generate any interest at all in doing something about Woodland Hills school taxes, which I know also affects you, and
yeah,
senior citizens, whether there's an interest in increasing sales tax a little bit so everybody contributes as opposed to just the seniors for the schools or something,
so
if you remember.
You know, property tax continues to be a major issue here in Pennsylvania, and many communities, including certainly ours in Woodland Hills, or for that matter, Penn Hills and some others. There's no discussion as of right now to create a shift from reliance upon property tax to some other means of property taxes, like sales tax or income tax or some other type of thing that we would use. So there's really no discussion along those lines. However, we do recognize that there's two parts to that equation. One is the seniors that I just talked about on the property tax and rent rebate. Last year, we did a 70% bonus to those folks who are eligible for that program. This year, we are increasing the income levels up to $45,000, which I think will go a long way in helping folks to be able to mitigate against their increases in property taxes. The second piece is the amount of money we fund our school districts. And that was the whole premise behind the lawsuit that took place over the course of the last several years that culminated with an 800-page decision just the last 2 weeks ago on school funding formula. We have to make appropriate investments in our educational system. We have an obligation to fund a strong public school system, and the governor's commitment to be able to do that with almost another $600 million in K-12 is an important step forward. That's the net new money going in. That's an important step forward to help mitigate against the cost of the rising cost of our school districts. One of the things that we have to continue to talk about, in my view, relates to charter school funding and how much money our charter schools are draining from our public school systems. We need to have reforms in the charter school space. Nothing unreasonable, but just thoughtful, reasonable steps that we need to do to help drain in some of those costs, because what we're finding out, particularly in a cyber school space, when you compare the education of a cyber school, the amount to educate in a cyber charter school versus a public school, which is brick and mortar, there's a significant difference in terms of the expenses associated with it, but yet the cost, the amount of money the school district has to pay is the same. So that's frustrating, but we have to still continue to talk about that. But that's another way in which we can reduce our property taxes as well. We also have to recognize that we've got to be cognizant of our spending at our school districts and the government, state government as well. One of the good things about what Governor Shapiro has done, he's laid out a 5-year plan where our revenues are going to be. He's only projecting a 1% increase in revenue growth, which really makes it very, it's a conservative estimate, even less than what the budget office that we have, that measures our income and our revenues, the independent fiscal office, they're saying it's about a 2% growth. He's saying 1%, which is forcing us to be able to spend less as we go forward. What this budget does do is spend less as it relates as we go forward, and is thoughtful with respect to the amount of money we have available over the course of the next 5 years. So we won't be seeing tax increases over the course of 5 years because he's going to be more thoughtful in his approach. Thank you for that. Great question.
Great. And next, we'll go to one of our online questions from Joanna Pro. She said, I'm excited for the investments at DCED, including municipal assistance, strategic management, and Keystone communities. How do those increases help communities in your district and our WPA region?
Thanks, Joanna. And, you know, she's right. There are major investments in various line items in the Department of Human Economic Development. And with a new secretary from Pittsburgh, Allegheny County, Rick Seiger, we're excited to what he's going to bring and certainly the work that Joanna knows very well. Those programs are just a couple of the programs that make investments in our communities. They give our communities the tools that they need to grow and prosper. They give us the tools they need to be able to make investments in our main streets and the upstream programs, but also serving as a means to be able to generate an opportunity or incentives for businesses who want to come locate here in Pennsylvania, and using those resources to be able to do that. So each of those programs, in their own way, especially, and also the $20 million for the Disadvantaged Community Fund, are all ways that we're going to benefit communities of all types to allow them to be able to continue to grow. Things like the RCAP program, which has been outstanding in terms of partnering with developers to do different things in our communities. The mixed-use tax credit is another example of something that's really important. The work we did last year will continue this year in the whole home repair program that's going to provide, beginning in May when the applications open in Allegheny County, folks will be able to apply for, you know, tens of thousands of dollars for home repairs if you meet income limits to be able to make repairs and solidify a home. When you solidify a home, not only do you stabilize the community, but you also develop and create a workforce that I think is going to be important as well. So economic development dollars, those are investments, and we have to look at them that way, and we need to be cognizant of what it means to make those investments, because that leverages other dollars and other program dollars and other private dollars to be able to make investments in communities, and that's something I'm very, very passionate about in terms of what we do along those lines. And thank you for that, Joan. That's a great question.
Great. And next, we'll go back to the phones. We have Gerald from Mount Oliver. Gerald, you're live.
Yes. Good evening, Senator Costa.
Good evening.
My question was, had we appropriated any programs that would liaise in the junior high schools and the high schools with the unions and some of the businesses and industries that would give these young folks something to do in between going to college and such like that, so they would be able to add something back to the community and be able to get some kind of educational starting from junior high school to you know, 10 years of school, being able to have programs that would probably foster a closer, I guess, like a liaison with the industries from the school standpoint of having these kids have something to look forward to other than just going to college, and being able to maybe just finding ways to connect industries, unions, and such like that with these kids before they get out of school.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think that's something that this budget does address, and we need to continue to talk about. CTE programs in our schools are really important. I know some of the ones in the city of Pittsburgh I'm familiar with are excellent, and they provide sort of a school-to-work transition for folks coming out of high school. Governor's proposing new resources, about $3.5 million to strengthen that program, basically a partnership between the CTE and the schools and employers, and also working to be able to create $3 million more to enhance the alignment between apprenticeships with our labor groups, providing for opportunities to be able to have them along those lines, be able to transition it from CTE into our apprenticeship programs, into these laboring positions, these skilled labor positions that, as you indicated, create tremendous family-sustaining wages and create tremendous careers. And in many of these industries, it's not the same as what it used to be. They don't look the same. Whether you are someone who's a steam fitter or a pipe fitter, or you're working an electrician or carpenter, the skill necessary is something that's really important. So coupling that academic or curriculum experience in the high schools, blending it with the CTE and moving it into these apprenticeship programs and school-to-work programs is going to be really important. These are positions that create good family-sustaining jobs as we go forward. That's something I think that the governor recognizes and has made a commitment to work in that space. So we're pleased with what he's doing. Certainly want to be able to do more. But also, as part of that is it's the mindset a lot of folks. So we have to continue to let folks recognize that the culture of everyone going to college may not necessarily be the best career path for a lot of folks. And so, and I think it's something we need to continue to do and work. And I think it's going to work out well in that space.
Next, we have James from Braddock Hills. James, you're live.
Okay. Good evening, Senator.
Good evening.
I want to talk about police reform, and
sure.
We need to develop some type of common sense approach. Whereas police officers are getting additional training. There should be a process or procedure for establishing, prohibition or even providing a moratorium on these police shootings. there should be some basic things similar to it should be prohibited to shoot an unarmed citizen in the back, shooting an unarmed citizen in a car or vehicles, eliminating extreme excessive force, stopping and shooting citizens for minor traffic stops, and we need to somehow provide additional supervision or have a supervisor on call to help de-escalate situations. These things have been happening over the years, and we need to do something. We can talk about things that we want to say, but until we put some type of procedures or that's the type of state mandate from the government to say that there is or a provision. Online to address these issues?
Yes. In fact, the governor talked today a little bit about the fact that while we recognize the shortage of police officers I indicated earlier, we need to ensure that the police officers are properly trained. Some of the things that you talked about that have occurred in our communities across Allegheny and across the Commonwealth are instances where they seem to be out of the normal type of training that takes place. With respect to some of the aspects of police officers discharging weapons, I mean, back in 2018, I proposed a series of measures that would require understanding the various aspects of the law, additional training, also making sure that as folks would move from one jurisdiction to another, that some of their activities follow them. Some of those things have been implemented already in state law. But as it relates to some of the things you talked about, the manner in which the police officers react to something as they're working. There's legislation that's been proposed, not necessarily in this budget document or by the governor through the budget, the appropriation process, but policies that have been talked about with respect to officer-involved shootings and what steps need to be taken there and how we redefine that piece of part of our state law. So those are issues that are out there. But as indicated, the governor's putting resources into PCCD to work with communities to be able to better equip neighborhoods and community-based organizations to be prepared to work in the community with young folks and be able to understand what the issues are and to have more of a relationship or understanding about what's happening in the community so we can avoid a lot of these instances that you're referring to or you're talking about. So he's committed. In fact, he's nominated and said that he is going to put our Lieutenant Governor from McKeesport, Lieutenant Governor Austin Davis, as the chairman of the Pennsylvania Commission on Crime and Delinquency, which is responsible for driving out these resources and developing these programs. So while there will be things along the lines of equipment that will be provided, there's no question that he's insisting upon appropriate training for any new police officers coming forward. So it's going to be both the best of both what we can do, the best with the training, but also with the number of officers along those lines. I hope that answers your question.
And next we have Robert. Robert, you're live.
Yes, this is Robert here.
Hi, Robert. What's your question, Robert?
I just have a question. What kind of available funding would you have available for like somebody with all like the gentrification that's going on in the city? Somebody that actually is from the area, like the East Liberty, Warner area, the East Side, that actually wants to get funding for to actually be a part of the rehabilitation as far as like a small business in that area.
So you specifically referenced East Liberty, and I would venture to say that under the definition of what I call what we provided for in years past and now was thrown into a general fund appropriation will be what's called the Historically Disadvantaged Business Assistance. These will provide resources for programs along those lines in those communities where folks have a hard time garnering capital. Banks may not be wanting to lend capital to folks in certain neighborhoods and the like. We got to get past that. And what this does, it provides a pot of $20 million to be able to do that. So there is a pot of money available along those lines. There are a number of small businesses, things that are out there. You know, Pennsylvania First is a program that the governor, as I mentioned, increased the use along those lines to be able to develop and target programs to help folks get started, to help businesses get started. So that's a broader conversation. But one specifically to like a place like disadvantaged communities, maybe like East Liberty, the areas you mentioned, Larmer, which I'm familiar with, and some other places, that pot of money would be exactly available for that fund. So keep an eye on that. Once we get through this budget process, to keep an eye on something along those lines. That would be one program. And we can work with you to lend assistance as you go down that path. But those programs are all housed in the Department of Community and Economic Development, which will be able to provide resources along those lines.
Great. Next we have Andrew from Swissvale. Andrew, you're live.
Hi. I'm curious if there are any funds allocated or available for things like ecological restoration, creation of community agriculture and community green spaces, and climate resiliency efforts. I'm pretty tapped into my community and my neighborhood. I've been talking to folks about vacant lots that need remediated and concerns about how climate change and other ecological issues are going to impact us in the future.
So as I mentioned, the governor is going to continue keeping us in the RGGI program. That's a priority of ours and mine. I think that's important. That's a broader conversation, a bigger conversation related to climate change. But in addition to that, we are adding more money into the Clean Water Fund, for example. I think it's $4 million to increase support for safeguarding our waterways. We have other programs that are there as well through what's called Act 13, which is actually the Marcellus Shale Fund that creates resources along those lines for clean water. There's the restoration program that exists in Act 13. There's greenways and trails that work in our communities along trails and the like. Those are some of the resources I think that benefit as well. We are increasing the oil and gas lease fund to be able to, you know, put resources and improve our state parks and our forest infrastructure. So we are making some investments along those lines. Probably more needs to be done as it relates to, in my view, and I think your point about more neighborhood community stuff. I will tell you that there's programming dollars that are available through something called local share accounts that we're working closely with our communities. You mentioned Swissvale, but I know I'm working in neighboring Wolfensburg with folks there with respect to parking lots, for example, to be able to sort of greenify parking lots and do things in that space. Other resources that we're going to be providing, a program called Small Water Grant Program, where you have community streams and community things that need to be impacted with resources from the state. That's not mentioned in the governor's budget address, but it's a program that we fund every year, Small Water Grant Program, as well as Large Water Grant Programs. Those are things that I think are beneficial to the community in this space. So there is work that's being done, but not quite as much, I think, as we would like to see. But I think that's something we'll continue to focus on.
Great. And we are going to keep going. We have lots of questions in the queue, but just a reminder to folks who are listening, if you do want to submit a question, you can press R3, and we will get you in our question queue. It looks like next we have John from Penn Hills. John, you're live.
Hi. Thank you for having this call, Senator. I have a quick question about the mention of public safety funding in the budget. Is that all going through the police department? Can you talk about other programs that aren't particularly related to the police department that would be going into?
I think some of the resources are going to be going into what I'll call first responders. I know the governor's interested in doing something in that space as well. So it all won't be in local police departments, or the state police, I should say, is the bigger lion's share of the resources, but also in the space of fire and also in what I call EMS, I guess, emergency responders. I think there's a conversation that some of the resources will make their way here. I'm trying to track my notes here to see exactly what that amount might be, but I do believe I recall him speaking about that in that programming, in that public safety realm.
Awesome. And next we have Roberta. Roberta, you're live.
Thank you. Good evening. I'm very much enjoying all the comments from the participants, and thank you, Senator Costa, for having this meeting. I was excited to hear about the investment in the preschool, I guess it's now called pre-K area. My daughter is a teacher. She's a second grade teacher, and she has seen, and I've been involved in education from a business standpoint for my entire career and have served on many committees for the governor over the last 40 years. And lifelong learning is so critical to our success in educating our children and having them enjoy participating in their education. And there are so many all communities need that pre-K experience for the children because it sets their mark to start in a good place to enjoy learning and continue to want to learn as they go through the school system. I shouldn't say school system, the learning system, whatever that happens to be, and encourages them for lifelong learning. And that ties into the excellent comment that was provided about school-to-work programs and any programs that can be provided, even in middle school and high school, which ties the students to opportunities to work with, I'll just say, companies or organizations or unions,
right,
that give them some experience as to what's out there, and also helps them have an interest and somewhere to go and something to do rather, I'll just use a phrase, to be on the streets, which is...
Yep. So I think what you're raising is a very good point. You know, I'm a believer that, to me, the best dollars we spend in government are the dollars we spend in early learning programs. The kindergarten programs, the pre-K money we put into place. To me, I think, you know, it's critically important. When I first started here, one of the governors that I worked with said very clearly that from, you know, 0 to 3, age 3, you know, you read, you learn to read, and from 3 and beyond, you read to learn. And that's why those, you know, those programs, the pre-K programs, the Head Start programs, other early intervention programs, how important they are to helping folks get off on the right foundation. And I think that's really important. The school-to-work programs I mentioned, there's just one couple of examples that work very well. I mean, we have tremendous labor groups in the Pittsburgh region, out the Allegheny County region, that have tremendous apprenticeship programs. From the Western Pennsylvania Laborers, have an outstanding program. IBEW number 5, you look at the steam fitters, you look at the iron workers, you look at the carpenters and the facilities that they have and the work that they do. These folks are building our region, and the caliber of work that's done, the workmanship is outstanding, of course, but they work closely with folks to be able to put folks on the right track through their apprenticeship programs and then send them off to, you know, skilled work that generates, as I mentioned, a good family-sustaining wage. So, you know, I'm a big believer in those programs, and it's important to have that connection between our schools, our programs in our high schools, our CTE programs, and then transition into workplace. I will tell you one of the big things that we're doing, I'm proud of working as a board member of Community College in Allegheny County, we are putting together a workforce training center. It's going to be about, now we're at about $60 million. It's beautiful for workforce facilities center on the north side, where we're going to be not only going to be training folks in a variety of different ways, but have the flexibility to maneuver and pivot when we need to be able to respond to the needs of businesses and industries here in Pennsylvania. So we're excited about what we'll be able to offer, a variety of different spaces that we'll offer, right? Industries work there to be able to train the workers that they need the skills, they need the curriculum to be able to be successful, including some of the workforce stuff I said with some of the labor groups. So those are exciting things that are going on. We just have to recognize it as a valuable educational experience that leads to a good career. Thank you for the call.
Next we have Alicia from the Hill District. Alicia, you're live.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you this evening? I'm calling. All of your programming sounds really good, and I'm sure it looks good on paper. But one of my concerns is the accessibility for those in need. How do they access these programs? And because often they have a hard time with the application processes and the things that, to get to the things that they need. But my main concern, the reason I wanted to speak tonight was about affordable housing. We have a large population of homeless people, and they're not, and they're being passed over because they're not sleeping in the street or under a bridge. They are sleeping on their relatives' houses and friends' houses and from place to place. And they have, and because they don't have a stable address, they are often unable to access a program that can help them to get the services that are needed. So is there a way that we could streamline accessibility for those in need? And I also wanted to mention gentrification in our communities and the disparities between the communities and how you will regulate the developers and the way that they are developing the community.
So you asked a couple of really good questions. Let me start with the last part of your question, the gentrification issue. I'm working and have been working with State Representative Sarah Inamorato on what's called loose legislation, long-time owner-occupied properties. That's a goal. Our goal is to be able to prevent those folks from being forced out of their homes because the work, development around them increases the value of their homes, increases their property taxes, and they can no longer afford to stay there. So we're taking steps to limit that growth in terms of the impact it has on those seniors in particular along those lines. We're hopeful that we're going to roll out, I think in a couple of weeks we're going to have an event along with Mayor Ganey to talk about that, but that's an important part of ensuring that we don't impact people's lives. People who have grown up in the neighborhood and lived in the neighborhood all their years don't want to be forced out, don't want to leave their homes because things around them are happening that they can't necessarily control. With regard to other things along the lines of what I'll call affordable housing, I've been working in a space along the lines, again, with Representative Morano, working closely with some folks from Action Housing, some other places, and developers in affordable housing through what's called the LIHTC, Low-Income Housing Tax Credit Program. We are building facilities across the region. In Pittsburgh, we had 6 new projects last year, a couple down in the city, one over in Wilkinsburg on Penn Avenue, the old Penn Lincoln Hotel site. It's going to have a number of housing units. We're going to have out in Edgewood, they started construction on Edgewood Town Center with another one. Penn Hills has one just opened about 6-8 months ago. There's 3, as I mentioned, in the city of Pittsburgh and in the Hill District and also in downtown. City's Edge is one. I think there's one up in Bedford Square. These are all tax credit programs that developers work closely with PHFA, the Pennsylvania Housing Finance Agency, to be able to create this affordable housing aspect of that. So people have an opportunity to move into homes along those lines. We just finished one in Forest Hills a couple years ago. That was the second one we did in Forest Hills, and there's more that we have to do. And there'll be some more coming out this year. We're working on one on Hazelwood on 2nd Avenue, one in Braddock we're working on, Braddock Lofts. We're trying to push those to try to get those projects approved as well. So that's an important part of what we do with the tax credits that we get from the federal government. We drive them out through that agency. With regard to homelessness, we've taken steps where we've created a 2nd Avenue Commons. That was a great step forward. Probably not, obviously we know the demand is far greater than what they can accomplish. They are doing good things there, trying to do the best they can to get folks off the street. But we have more to do, and we have to look to do some of the things to maybe convert some of our either city or county or state buildings, be able to convert them into programs, for example, like the 2nd Avenue Commons with investments. We need to work in that space, and that's human services resources that do that, and the governor's providing resources along those lines to accomplish that. So those are in the housing space, that's where a lot of good work is going on. Thank you.
Wonderful. Next, we have Sharon from Overbrook. Sharon, you're live.
Hi, and thank you. I have an issue, like, with all the inflation. I know, like, the average lower and middle class folk are really seeing issues in their pocketbook. Now, with your with the proposed $15 minimum wage increase, anyone who is aware of simple economics knows that if you are increasing the wages of minimum of the minimum wage, that means that prices are going to go up yet again, and people who are regular people aren't going to get an increase in pay like the people that will get it on minimum wage. So, and I personally am a retired teacher who receives funding through PESERS, the Pittsburgh State Education Association, and or system, and I'm on a fixed budget. Is there going to be an increase of living increase for us, or are we just expected to, you know, see other people's incomes go up, and yet we're stuck, and we don't have any more money that we can barely afford to buy food or put gas in our car?
Yeah, there are steps to a couple of my colleagues here, and I've joined them in calling on a cost of living increase for our retirees, both in the CSRS and the PSRS system. So I think that's important. They have not had a cost of living adjustment in quite a number of years. There are folks who are what are referred to as pre-Act 9 folks, which about, you know, 15 or 20 years ago, they were left behind. So we are trying to take steps to address that and providing resources along those lines for a cost of living increase in that space. We haven't done it for about 20 years or so, is my understanding. So I think it's time we take something, we take a look at that. And we recognize the impact that as cost and prices continue to go up, folks on fixed income is more difficult for them. That's why we have to take steps, keep our property taxes down. That's why we need a LOOP program that I mentioned earlier. That's why we need to do more in the senior property tax and rent rebate program. Those are all things that we try to do to help folks who live on fixed incomes that are being impacted by property taxes, for example. So we hope to be able to fix that this session between now and June 30th. So keep an eye on things, and we'll go from there. Hey, Jessica, I see that someone's asked a question about where we can get this information. And I will tell you, we are going to post it on our website. So anyone that wants to go to our senatorcosta.com, we will have a space where you can get the governor's budget address, the governor's summary of the budget address, every single line item. You'll be able to get other aspects of the proposal that go in much greater detail than I've been able to talk about. So I mentioned to you it's a 44.4 state budget proposal, and it's all told it's about $90+ billion in terms of dollars going out. If you printed out all the pages, it'll be about a 4-inch book that we used to get all the time. Now we get it on a disc. But the point I'm making is that information that we're talking about is all available to folks on our website. So we'll have a special location for that for folks to be able to do that. With respect to the caller, as you mentioned, asking about how can folks access these programs, accessibility to these programs, my office stands ready to work with folks along those lines. We do a tremendous amount of work in the property tax and rebate space. We do a lot of work in the Human Service Agency with programs. We do a lot of work in the PennDOT space with issues that folks have. But also in the social service agencies, both at the county and the state level, we're able to assist folks in that space, so we're available to be able to do that. I've got an office in Bloomfield on Liberty Avenue. I've got an office in Forest Hills. But if you just call our office, folks will be able to access. Our folks will be able to work with you to develop what needs to get done.
Great. Senator, do you want to take one more call before we wrap up?
Yeah, we have another call or two. I'll be quick in my responses.
Okay, great. We will go to Victor. Victor, you're live.
Yes. How you doing, Senator?
I have
a two-part question. It'll be quick.
Sure.
I'm calling on behalf of Capable Caring Hands Home Care Agency to take care of the elderly and disabled. The owner is Sheila Clemens. She's a minority woman owner. If you talk about going up to $15 minimum wage, that'll put a lot of small home care agencies out of business because the state only gives them $19.25 an hour for each worker. And it's hard to get workers now just trying to give them $12, $13 an hour. Now, my second part of the question is, being Sheila Clemens of Capable Caring Hands is a disadvantaged small all-woman business owner, she couldn't get funding through the pandemic, even right now. She can register with SAM as a disadvantaged woman-owned business, and it seems like they're sending the funding to larger businesses. And she's from the Hill District. Her office is in Monroeville, but there's no opportunity for her to even get funding.
So I will say, I'm not sure what happened last time, other than I can say that we didn't have enough money available for folks last time when we had this program. We did, I believe, $100 million in this program, and it still wasn't enough given the things that folks went through along those lines. The new defined disadvantaged communities, I think business in those communities might be the issue. If our business is in Monroeville, it may be the issue that it may not necessarily qualify for a disadvantaged community. But that's something we can take a look at, and we'll work with you guys and her to be able to figure out what needs to be done in that space. But your point about the rates that we pay, yeah, you're right. I mean, if we're going to force increase in the minimum wage, we're going to have to address the issue of our rates. And I know, as I mentioned, in the child care space, the governor talked about, you know, putting out $67 million more in child care space, but with the goal to be able to provide more resources to the providers to be able to pass along the increase in the rates so that they can retain folks to be able to work with our young kids or fill those position slots that they have to be able to ensure that they're maximizing the capacity that they have with the number of slots that they do have. So the mission is maybe not necessarily the slots, but rather the amount of money we pay in that space. So the same thing has to happen, I believe, in the home care space. We have a lot of issues in the home care space that we have to talk about in terms of being able to support the workers. They're caring for our loved ones, and for some reason, we're just not where we need to be with respect to the amount of money we spend there, and we fund in those rates. Same thing goes to our nursing home workers as well and our assisted living facilities. Folks who are providing that care, they're doing God's work in many instances, and it's difficult. And we just don't seem to recognize it for the value that they provide. So that's something I appreciate you bringing up on our call tonight. Something we need to take a look at.
Great. And we can do one more call. And a quick note for the folks that submitted a question and did not get to speak tonight. If you stay on the line after tonight's call wraps up, you will be able to leave a voice message, and Senator Costa's office will be able to receive that voice message and get back to you. For our last call tonight, we will go to Deborah in Huntwood. Deborah, you're live.
Jesse?
Yep, Deborah, you're live.
Okay, I was calling about these abandoned houses that sit on our block of the homeowners. All these abandoned housing, and we actually, over the years, to have them tore down there, especially with rodents and tearing down our property value. How can we get attention to the city and to our congressmen to have these houses tore down because they're bringing down our property value?
So, you know, today, last night, I had a number of meetings with Mayor Ganey here, and then today, again, with Mayor Ganey and County Executive Fitzgerald, and this issue came up about what I'll call demolition resources. Resources to give to the local municipalities to be able to clear abandoned properties, to be able to get them, you know, maybe a neighbor wants to buy the property next door or get them back on the tax rolls, get them involved in the land banks that we have to create a cluster of properties. So those are some of the things we did talk about. It comes down to resources. And I will say to you that when it used to cost maybe $10,000 on behalf of the city to tear down a property, for a variety of reasons and interpretation of federal statutes, it now probably costs $25,000 or so to tear a structure down because of some of the environmental hazards that may be in a home. For example, like lead paint or asbestos. So while the pot of money has grown to some degree, it has also not been able to do as many, I would say, demolitions that we need to. So we have to take a good look at that. I know the mayor's office is concerned about that. We talked about it yesterday. And I suspect that that's what's going to happen going forward. I'm working with our community in Wilkinsburg. There are programs, something that I think communities can look at, called Local Share Account, which provide resources along those lines. It's a a competitive program, but one of the areas that some folks are taking a look at, local governments are looking at, is using that money for tearing down abandoned properties. So I think certainly we know they create a lot of hazards, and we've got to take steps to address that. So I think that conversation will continue. Speaking of, I know we've pretty much used up all of our time, Jessica. I want to remind folks that next week we are going to have a I'm having another telephone town hall on next Wednesday evening, and it will be with Mayor Ganey. So if you reside in the city of Pittsburgh, you'll be able to participate in that conversation. The conversation is going to be about his plan to do an assessment of all of those for-profit, non-profit entities that enjoy the charitable exemption. Do an assessment of those properties to see whether or not they're complying with state law as it relates to their public charity status. So tune in for that conversation next week, and I suspect that we'll probably be able to get into some of the other questions that we weren't able to answer today. But I think that'll be a good opportunity to have a good discussion with the mayor next week.
Yes, and information about that call will be available on the senator's website, or you can always call his office. Senator, did you want to close it out tonight with any final remarks about the budget and our discussion?
Yes, thanks, Jessica. And I want to thank everyone for listening and asking the great questions that we heard about the governor's budget proposal. And to folks who are on the line, I apologize we couldn't get to your questions. As Jessica indicated, if you want to stay on the line, you can present that question to our folks, and they'll forward it to me, and we'll get a response to you very quickly. But I've been blessed and very fortunate to represent a great part of the city of Pittsburgh and Allegheny County, and I'm excited about what this budget proposal allows us to do. It is comprehensive. It covers a lot of territory, and it covers a lot of things that Governor Shapiro talked about during the campaign and things that he heard from the people of Pennsylvania. So we're excited about him committing, keeping his commitment to address these issues to the people of Pennsylvania. Now it's our job. We're going to go to work and work in a bipartisan way. I'm encouraged by the governor's willingness to be able to want to work with Democrats and Republicans, which is what we need to do to ensure that we get the best product possible come June 30th for the people of Pennsylvania. So it's exciting times. We're going to have great conversations, and there'll be give and take as we go forward. There may be some things that we didn't even talk about today and the governor didn't talk about that we will be able to maybe put into place between now and then. So we're also addressing and responding to situations across Pennsylvania. So this is the time we have that conversation, and I'm looking forward to it. I look forward to hearing your input, whether it be by phone call or visit or email or text. Tell me what you think as we go forward. So thanks again for the chance to be with you, and this will be the first of many telephone town halls that we have over the course of the next several months. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Senator, and thank you again to everyone who joined us tonight and who submitted a question. One more time, we will say that if you did not have a chance to ask a question, please remain on the line. You will be able to leave your question on the voicemail, and the Senator's office will get back to you. If you have any additional questions or concerns, you can call Senator Costa's Forest Hills office at 412-241-6690 or visit his website at senatorcosta.com. Thank you again, and good night.
Good night.